And press this button and say, hi, you're on KNYOLP Fort Bragg, KMECLP Ukiah. How can I help you?
Hey, Marco, it's Zeke.
Hi, Zeke. I had just started reading a story by Scott Peterson, but I'm only three paragraphs into it, so I'm going to start it over again whenever we're finished doing whatever it is that you need to do. You said that you, in your email, you said that you had two or three stories to read?
Three essays.
Are they connected in some way?
They all have to do with gay rights issues.
All right. How long do you think that'll run?
10, 15 minutes.
Okay, well then just go for it and read them straight through as though they're all one thing.
Okie doke. Here we go. The first essay is called Heterophobia, The Great Lie. I don't buy into this heterophobia theory one bit. Any gay who does already reveals his own self-betrayal, hypocrisy, and lack of pride. To accuse a gay person of heterophobia or biphobia is like accusing a concentration camp survivor of Nazi phobia. As far as the terms biphobia and heterophobia, they are invalid because non-existent. Whatever disgust a gay person shows towards bis and straights is founded on truth, not illusion, and homophobia possesses such extensive dimensions of hatred, violence, and ignorance that to even accuse a gay person of either biphobia or heterophobia is in itself a homophobic manipulation. Biphobia is a crock, so is heterophobia. Homophobia, on the other hand, is real. A phobia is any unjustified fear or hatred. From Random House Dictionary, phobia, a persistent, irrational fear of a specific object, activity, or situation that leads to a compelling desire to avoid it. Homophobia is totally unjustified. It is a violent and cruel act of persecution to a vulnerable group of people. Ergo, homophobia is a true phobia. Fear and hatred of heterosexuals is quite real, as so many are homophobic, and often difficult to discern which ones aren't. In our heterosexist society, no gay person can safely be himself or herself anywhere in our nation without the persistent threat of being murdered, beat up, job loss, housing loss, or a number of other horrible responses. It's like living in a world crowded with Charles Manson types, only you don't know who are and who aren't until you are suddenly attacked from an unexpected direction. I have met more than my share of charming, ultra-liberal heteros who have totally resolved any bigotry regarding racism, misogyny, anti-Semitism, and so on. They have all bases covered but one. They get all bent out of shape when it comes to gay equality and eagerly promote vitriolic hatred against gays along with physical bashing. Otherwise, they are the most pleasant people you could ever hope to meet. They are the most, and you can be friends with them for years, but if you're gay and begin to get a bit too pushy about gaining equal respect, watch out. If heterophobia or biphobia were real, we'd have roving gangs of queers bashing straights or bis, queer property owners evicting them, and queer employers firing them. None of this is the case. But if you insist heterophobia is real by pointing out the occasional slur a gay might make about straights, then you are equating an action that is so ridiculously mild as to be harmless with another action that is deplorably brutal and malicious. In other words, you would be homophobic yourself. All right, here is a second essay called It's the Homophobia, Stupid. In our perverted society, and in many others, the sign of a real man is gal bashing and fag bashing, which, as a gay activist and dedicated feminist, I often speak out against. Even here in gay Mecca, San Francisco, homophobia and misogyny are alive and thriving. Female pornography and hardcore sex clubs thrive, and any man who admires the beauty of another male is at risk of violence, or at best, public disgust and derision. I consider the pornographication of women to be horrific and an utter degradation of any society, and seems about to cross the line into popularizing snuff films. It is this commonly shared violence of male machismo which closely unites the cause of both women and sexual minorities. I have also come to the realization, after many years' introspection, that worldwide violence, war, poverty, famine, slavery, etc., will only come to an end once homophobia is eradicated. Notice how much better a nation fares when it comes to respect its own LGBT community. All other minorities and females win, too. Those nations would be most of Western Europe, especially Scandinavia and Holland, and the former British Commonwealth of Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. In fact, it is the European Union pressing member wannabes to cease their homophobic attitudes as a prerequisite for joining their civilized network. Social engineering is why we are constantly bombarded by heterocentric notions in the media via movies, advertisements, and most other entertainment and news. In fact, I propose renaming movie theaters, quote, heterosexist indoctrination centers, unquote, to more accurately define their true purpose. Female rock stars, no matter how old, I mean Tina Turner, are displayed like jailbait carts for the titillation of male audiences. This is a crude form of social engineering, though most effective. Turn off the machismo spigot and watch how quickly bisexuality becomes the norm. And as a consequence, respect towards females and queers. Men will no longer feel pressured to produce unwanted babies simply to prove to the public their manliness and non-gayness. They will no longer be coerced to threaten and bash queers to likewise prove their masculinity. In fact, I believe that the very root of war is the subliminal current of machismo. All these red-blooded, infuriated males, all riled up to fight any culture Uncle Sam perceives as wimpy and un-American. Just look at how redneck citizens view our European and Canadian allies as a bunch of simpering faggots. Not shown in the mainstream news regarding wartime footage is our own soldiers scrawling homophobic graffiti throughout enemy territory. Of course, this exacerbates Arabs because they have proven to be even more gay-hating than the U.S. of A., and that's saying a mouthful, excuse pun, and so it goes round and round. Gays are like the bonobos chimps of the human race. Distribute us in straight places of government, and we'll really show you how to make love, not war. Brotherly and sisterly love. Homosexuals are the tempering force of society, and once we are allowed to breathe free, we will dismantle all forces that seek to rape, pillage, and otherwise decimate what goodness and joy exists in any culture. It's our nature. But until societies across the world wake up to the very fact that resolving homophobia will also resolve male violence and war, we will continue down the sorry path of terror and fascism. Even with rare exception, our most liberal and progressive movements continue to trivialize the utter importance of gay liberation to their own detriment and to America's and the world's. I nonetheless applaud those still way too few media, political, social outlets who are finally waking up. Salute. And the third and final piece is called Talons Equal Queer Stereotype. I abhor the show Earth's Final Conflict because it gets away with some very ignorant stereotyping of gay people, as manifest in the Talon race. I know Gene Roddenberry dreamed of including gay folks as regular characters in his Star Trek series that was censored by the Hollywood brown shirts. When I first watched EFC, Earth's Final Conflict, I was shocked to see this Talon character, very swishy, wrist-flicking, lisping, sissified, elitist, weird-looking, asexual geek. I had to conclude that these talons were created from the mind of a well-meaning but ignorant heterosexual. Sure, Roddenberry finally got his wish, but at what cost to real gay people still burdened with the yoke of tyranny by the same country that produced tribe like Earth Final Conflict? Here we have an alien faggot behaving like every good faggot should, in the eyes of dogmatic Christians, that is, by not having any sex, and by defining them as asexual, the show could go on without the censor's interference, which would have happened if they were portrayed as outright homosexual. Of course, everyone knows the Talons are silly queers, and in that way, and only that way, would the American public accept such regular gay characters. If I were a well-meaning but ignorant hetero sci-fi writer, I guess I could come up with a race of queers that, by virtue of being asexual, as the good Lord wants them to be, would evolve into these freaky tights with enormous brains that resulted from all this unused sperm backing up the spine. Now, they would be put to use serving hetero mankind. These Talon faggots are catering to every need of all the earthling, red-blooded, hetero heroes. Not a gay person among them. Again, the good Christian role of every queer is to not only be asexual, but a servant, a slave dedicated to the happiness of heterosexual relationships. Just like in that Australian film, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, where some drag queens are stuck in a redneck town, enhancing the romantic lives of the hetero residents. Damned if they didn't assist the happiness of any gay person living there, which residents didn't even seem to exist. These Talons are in no way handsome or robust heroes, as are the star characters, who are obviously American breeders. Also, Talon suggests Talon, and you just know how faggots love to pull out their claws and scratch your eyes out, honey. Now, why stop with Talons? Why not Baboons, a dark-skinned race that trades in watermelon seeds and whose lips are so big they can actually vibrate into action their marvelous rocket engines? Or yellow-skinned, slant-eyed Beijings, whose massive overbite can open fuel pods with a single chomp? Or Gimplets, whose twisty vestigial legs can serve as hooks for grasping and riding on asteroids? But my favorite idea is this, a sci-fi show featuring heteroids, giant semi-intelligent hemorrhoids that are breeding themselves into oblivion by their own animal lust. They, too, would be heroes in their way as an example of the horrors of overpopulation and dogma of heterosexual supremacy. Now, here's an addendum. Someone wrote to my guest book, my Final Testament or Gay Bible guest book. He calls himself Zeb Surfer. He wrote, "I'd like to speak out against your derision of the show, Gene Roddenberry's Earth, Final Conflict. First off, if you think the Talons, the alien species depicted in the show, is a representation and, as you say, a misrepresentation of homosexuals, you are wrong. The Talons are nowhere within the scheme human. They, in the show's mythology, are asexual and androgynous, and more specifically, in their true form, energy-based, having no physical exterior. So this already rules out genitalia, the one key factor defining sexuality. So they are neither male nor female sexually, thus they cannot be homosexual or heterosexual. The Talons are dubbed male for the simple fact that it eases reference. It superficially eliminates the need of considering them it. Why male may be the fact that you could probably be right in that the show tries to elevate the male gender. But this argument is geared more to women's rights than gay rights. To get back on their energy-based life force, the Talons are in their long evolution attempting spiritual perfection, no longer needing or being inhibited by any physical factors. One fact could be that because they are asexual and also physical-less, they lack sexual drive. Without sexual organs, there cannot be sexual drive or even need of sex, thus not being either heterosexual or homosexual. And one question is to you. Where did you get the idea that they depict homosexuals? Every single talent shown on the show is played in real life by a female. The contradiction and attempt at females playing male-depicted roles is one problem that may support your argument of homosexuality. But being an avid fan of the show, I believe this wasn't the purpose of philosophy behind the show. And when you say that the Kalons are slaves to humanity, then I must say you haven't viewed the show, or at least in an unbiased way. Gene Roddenberry derived much of the show's essence in depicting how humanity would deal with an advanced alien culture and the roles and problems that may be encountered. This is what greatly drew me to the show. It is unique and focuses more on humanity than any other alien species. The whole basis of the show was to show that despite the Talons' benevolent gifts to humanity, they have an ulterior motive to subjugate humanity to save their dying race and to fight off their enemies and genetic brethren, the Jaridians, by bioengineering, forced experiments, manipulation, subterfuge, and geopolitical exploitation. All these things are completely opposite to any slave or subservient qualities. Lastly, the most important argument would be the one that encompasses gender as a whole. We can all agree that sex is what's between the legs and gender is what's between the ears, i.e. brain. Wholly considered, gender doesn't truly exist, only sex. Male and female genders are subjective and psychological labels we see as a society as a whole have pinned on people. We came up with the idea that females are soft, sensitive creatures juxtaposed with males, the macho, dominant, in control of their emotions, hardheads. If that is true, would G.I. Jane be more male than female? Would the Amazon warriors of the ancient times be males in essence, although all being women? No, the inferiority complexes dubbed on females is groundless, and the societal label of males as sex-obsessed, unintelligent, foolish pigs is also just as bad. This leads into the argument of homosexuality, which, despite what is said, is pervasive, not in any negative connotation, in society, and has a long history extending as far as the beginnings of rational Homo sapiens, and is not cultured or imposed of only in America. It is said that if the world population was reduced to 100 people, 11 would be gay. Homosexuality exists among all people and places, but homosexuality exists exactly in the context it is limited to. Sexuality, that is when a male, the sex of a human, has intercourse, copulation, or sexual union with a human of the same male sex, where the whole idea of psychological viewpoint of lesbians as manly or homosexual men as feminine or soft is, as mentioned of the gender theory, groundless. No matter how sensitive, soft, sissified a boy is, it doesn't make him a homosexual. Only when he copulates either through oral, anal, or group masturbation of sexual stimuli involving two or more people of the same sex gives the title of homosexual, correctly justified. I am in no way trying to justify the heterosexual agenda, if such exists, or trying to spread my message of homosexuality or gender either through a secular point of view or a Christian doctrine, although I am trying to defend your unjustified insult to Earth's Final Conflict, a unique science fiction anthology that tries to analyze the basic ideas of what is human. Before you can make a judgment, a viewpoint, a statement about anything, you must first understand it. After all, isn't that how all forms of abhorrent prejudice, racism, sexism, religious persecution, homophobia, or even heterophobia is based? Through unreasoned, unjustified, unknowledgeable facts? Now, my response. Dearest, clueless, breeder earthling, I know you expect me to list, though I'm giving you some satisfaction right now. However, no more lisping for the rest of my essay, as my strong alien accent will only get in the way of important communique. Every single point you make, however poorly, was already deconstructed in Comrade Zeke's essay, Talons, Queer Stereotype, which anticipated such unworthy comments like yours. Your kind must suffer the sad fate that is the fact that is the lot of heterosexuals, for it is not the Creator's intent that you be designed with too much intelligence. Forget for a moment all the Roddenberry crap plugging up your mind like a Klingon bowel impaction, which incidentally can go on for centuries, much like the ignorant hubris of your own pseudo-gay-friendly hetero-earthlings who insist on being the last word on homosexuality, even in relation to queers. Ever hear the saying, one picture is worth a thousand words? Well, put all those final conflict words out of your mind if you want to get the picture. So just forget Earth's final conflict, Gene Roddenberry, and Star Trek. Forget they ever existed at all. Clear your mind like Ex-lax to anus, then look at us anew with the unbiased eye of a Vulcan executioner. Please scroll down. Now, come on, give us a break. How on earth would a faggot be the immediate thing to come to mind when seeing us for the first time? Most humans do, in fact, react this way as their first impression. And please notice we are all clothed in shades of purple or pink, clearly an indication of being that way. Do you think we were born yesterday? No matter how much you attempt to window dress our species, the Talons, slice, dice, or ice us, we still remain as ever, stereotypical faggots from the 21st century out of the twisted minds of possibly well-meaning but still dumb Hollywood breeder elite script writers and producers. Even you, as much as said, we are women stuck in male bodies. How's that for an obvious stereotype? And that's just one among numerous examples so expertly presented in Comrade Zeke's brilliant essay. Brilliant for an earthly sentient being, that is. Yes, we are portrayed as asexual and androgynous, which cleverly passes the TV industry's anti-homosexual censors. But we assure you, Zeb Surfer, that between tapings we just can't get enough of each other's frail little jailbait bodies as much as possible. Why, we're about as horny as those randy little tribbles, minus the fertility factor, of course. While we are portrayed as heroes like our earthling counterparts, not one of us is the least bit attractive. Unlike the human stars who, we might add, are all portrayed as heterosexuals, like all previous Roddenberry series, not so much as even one clearly homosexual character has appeared in any of their myriad shows. We are the closest things to homosexuals ever portrayed in Star Trek-like series. The obviously heterosexual and, if gay, hetero-ass-licking writers may have been well-meaning. But we are portrayed as stereotypical faggots because your sub-intelligent culture would howl in outrage should we ever come out of our closet on the boob tube. Zeb Surfer, your hetero slip is showing. When you make a statement that homosexuals can only be defined by having sex with another hominid of the same gender. A fine example of breeder hubris. As if heterosexuals were the only gender to dignify their relationships. By defining queers as incapable and even unworthy of having affection and spiritual feelings for those they truly love. Just like those unworthy breeders, as you most certainly are, poor ape, to define who and what queers are, never mind asking sexual minorities how they see themselves in the scheme of things. You said something very revealing, quote, Gene Roddenberry derived much of the show's essence into depicting how humanity would deal with an advanced alien culture, unquote. And it is all too clear to us Talons and enlightened human queers that both your race and our advanced culture are devoid of any homosexual presence or even acknowledgement. What happened to them? Were they all exterminated or perhaps isolated on some hideously remote and dark planet out of view of any godly heterosexual or asexual? And where you say, quote, before you can make a judgment, a viewpoint, a statement about anything, you must first understand it, unquote. I can only shake my bulbous head in pity, for it is all too obvious that you remain ignorantly heterocentric to the core, for you willfully remain pathetically ignorant about the true spirit of homosexuality, which is brotherly or sisterly love. And to understand that, you must first understand queers. You, dim-witted anthropoid, do not. The weak queers of the universe always have the final laugh, if not the final conflict, snicker, because we have a secret we shall now reveal to you. No sentient being can travel beyond the immediate vicinity of its own home planet unless and until the entire global population is totally homosexualized. For the details on this cosmic law, see Zeke's essay entitled Neo-Christianity and perhaps The First Christ, where Kurt Vonnegut's Tralfamadorians reveal themselves to be 100% homosexual. In conclusion, we can only wag our imaginary penises, which have been unceremoniously castrated by Roddenberry's disciples, and remark, quote, "Why wear the pink triangle when you look as faggoty as us?" unquote. Signed, Ambassador De'An, Talon Synod, North America. And that's the end of the three essays.
I remember talking to you, Zeke, before, and you said that Star Trek is not your cup of tea, so I'm guessing that you haven't been keeping up with the latest series of Star Trek.
No, not at all. I watched the first episode and got bored.
The first episode of Discovery?
Yeah, that's the name.
Because there are queer characters who were totally fully realized in Discovery that maybe you didn't stick around long enough to find out. But the Doctor.
Well, that's incredible that they finally got around to doing that.
throughout there were characters that you're right, disguised in some way or another. I recognize that, and I appreciate what you had to say on the subject. But at least by the latest series, there is no distinction between heterosexual and homosexual love and a relationship in the latest Star Trek.
Well, good. So as I'm being carried off to a concentration camp soon under this Trump dynasty, I will continue. I will finally praise the series.
Yeah, the Doctor. The Doctor on the ship Discovery has a in every way what you would call a normal human relationship with the navigator of the. I don't want to go into all the details because I'd start talking and I would still be talking in half an hour about the details of the fungus drive. But the navigator of the fungus drive they share a cabin and they have it. There's nothing at all strange about their relationship relative to the relationship of heterosexual crew members.
Well, that's good. That's not just good. It's very important for the media, especially popular media, in other words, Hollywood, to portray homosexuality in a benevolent light instead of always the same old hackneyed plot that if you're gay, your life's going to end tragically and all that stuff. That's all very good and very important. I just find Star Trek rather boring.
There are other series, other science fiction series that you might like. Did you ever get into the version of Battlestar Galactica that they made after the year 2000?
I watched it for a while. I didn't care for that either.
You didn't care for that? Did you like any of the Stargate series? There were three of them.
No, not particularly.
Okay. I don't think
science fiction carries itself well as a TV series.
Yeah.
Not even half of sci-fi movies are really, really good. I think it,
wow.
For me,
okay.
I demand really good special effects along with a good plot that grabs you. And of course, I'm very intellectual. I like that too. But another TV series, really, I really cared for any science fiction ones.
Hmm. Do you know
except
about
when they're campy, maybe like Outer Limits sometimes?
Okay. Well, you think of Outer Limits as campy. That was that's the foundation of my consciousness. Twilight Zone, the original Outer Limits, the black and white, not the one from 20 years later that was just terrible, absolutely terrible. But I'm thinking of a TV series that started on the web, and then it was a private project, and they got some backers, and they spread it out. I don't think it ever made it big on TV, but it ran for several seasons. The special effects would not wow you. The special effects are mostly green screen. They're in locales that are beautiful locales, but it's pretty obvious that they're in a studio and the locales is painting behind them, you know, digital painting.
Well, in Star Trek series,
the reason, just let me say the name of that series. It's called Sanctuary. And it was put together by Amanda Tapping, who was Major Carter, and before that, Captain Carter, in the Stargate series. So you'll recognize which character that is. The blonde woman, she and someone else put this thing together, and it ran for like 4 or 5 years, and I really liked it. And I spread it among some other people, that, you know, the knowledge of this particular show being available, and some pretty smart people told me that they liked it a lot. Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. The overview is that the world doesn't just have intelligent creatures that are people in it. It has other people that are like people, but different in some big way, like they have a power, or they have a physical thing that happens to them at a certain time. Like, for example, the werewolves are an inhuman person, a creature like that. They exist, and there are vampires, for example. These are just different kinds of people that they're hiding in the shadows, and there are people who live in caverns under the ground, and there are people who have. You may not like the first episode because it's kind of stretched out. They were trying to, you know, establish their footing, but they really did establish
Sanctuary.
Their footing. Sanctuary. The show is Sanctuary.
Yeah.
If you watch 2 or 3 episodes of that, and you don't like it, then you can just stop. But I think you'll like
it. Check it out.
I really liked it.
Yeah, I do some reptilian themed tales. I'm tired of all these conspiracy theories, because reptilians are a big part of that, and that they're all heterosexual. That like all these conspiracy theorists and phony futurologists, it's like there are no gay people in the future if you go by them. They're all dead. They're all gone. They don't exist. They don't count, right? So I took the reptilian theory and morphed them into 100% homosexual and totally benevolent instead of hostile, and I've written some very good
Didn't I read
pieces,
one of those? Didn't I read one of those stories on the show like about a year ago? Yeah, I think I did.
Yes.
One of the longer ones. It was like a little book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was good. Oh, another TV show that I learned. Did you ever see... I'm sorry, let me just say, did you ever see a show called Defiance?
If I have, I guess not.
It's 50 years after the war between Earth and the aliens who came here thinking that the place was empty and they were just going to terraform the place and make it look like their planets and they could live here. But we were already dangerous by that time, and a war was started, and so it's 50 years after that. Or thereabouts, and the show follows mainly a kind of a big, dumb like a fox salvage man who drives around in a jeep, finding places where alien terraforming ships have broken up and crashed, and salvaging materials from it in order to make some money. And he's raising a little alien girl that he rescued in the war.
Mm-hmm.
He was raising this little girl as his own daughter, and the relationship between Nolan, the man, and that little girl whose name is Lissa is just, it's a golden father-daughter situation where she is really not just, you know, an alien, like teenagers are all alien and who knows why they do the things they do and they just hate you sometimes and they have ideas of their own about how to behave. She's really an alien little girl, and it's just a magical show. Very Shakespearean as it devolves into the story of all the different kinds of aliens who are all trying to get along with each other or not, and the few people who are left in a little town on what's left of St. Louis, Missouri, with the wrecked arch gateway to the west towering over just these hovels and this little sort of western town, where technology doesn't really work anymore. And they have some record players, you know, record players work. And so they have a little radio station up in the top of what's left of the arch, and the kid goes up there and plays records, you know, from 50 or 75 years ago. And it's really it's a grand and long and an epic story that ran for 2 or 3 years, and then it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. If you watch it through, like binge watch it through, it's like, you know, 40 or 50 hours of a brilliant story, and I think you'll like that too. That's called Defiance.
All right. Well, I don't think I have that kind of time, but I'll
well,
watch
well,
some
what
of
else
shows.
Are you going to do with your time? Write a story and send it to me, and I'll read it next week.
Yeah, what I do in my time is so important, having to do with gay rights and the issues. I don't like to be detracted or distracted too much for any of that. And I don't know how much longer I have to live. And, you know, I'm turning 68 soon. And there's only so much I can read and do. And I don't want to just read
stuff. All right,
well,
I'm just letting you know that these things exist in case you're ever laid up in the hospital for a while and you need something to look at.
Oh, that's a nice thought. I doubt I'd be laid up in the hospital. Medi-Cal won't cover me. If it even exists much longer, I'd be more like lying down on a curb.
Did you ever see a movie called The American Astronaut? I think it was made.
Yes, I started watching it. I get it, you know, but it's not my cup of tea. I like Westworld, the new one.
Oh, you like that?
The TV series.
Okay, I couldn't. I just didn't want to. Maybe I'll try it.
Yeah. Well. See, I don't like science fiction when it's used as a cover for family values, you know, which a lot of it is.
Well, that's what Defiance is, except the aliens have way, way different family values than humans do.
Yeah.
And it's the conflict
Or when they have aliens that are obviously human beings in makeup and a rubber costume, which a lot of Star Trek was.
They glue stuff on your forehead, you know, they put some putty on your forehead and then smear it over with makeup and then you're an alien.
And many of their concepts or ideas that portray themselves as profound and deep thinking I find rather shallow and boring.
I get it
and stuff. But I've read good science fiction. H.G. Wells, he's the father of all this stuff, you know. And including aliens being poisoned by something, you know, unexpected that the humans have, you know, bacteria, virus, or whatever, and so forth. H.G. Wells' movies were fun, movies based on that. I watched in a movie theater The Time Machine, and as a youngster, I really liked it, but when I watched it again some years back, I thought, oh, my God.
This is terrible. Did you see the remake with the guy who played in Memento?
With Tom Cruise? Who?
The Time Machine.
The guy who played what?
In Memento. Memento was a man whose brain was damaged in a crime.
I saw that movie. I very rarely even bother
Pierce.
To memorize
His name is Pierce, but that particular actor played in a movie that I just... I see. Okay, I'm getting tired now because I just lost what I was thinking about like 10 seconds, literally 10 seconds ago. I'm going to put on some music, I'm going to heat up my tea, and then I'm going to start reading the rest of the story.
I have some raspberry tea I just heated up that's ready to sip on now.
Well, there you go. I'll have my tea. You have your tea. And send me your story next week. I'll read it because I'll be at Juanita's house, and I have to limit the number of people who call me on the phone there, especially...
I'm working on a piece right now. It's taking a lot more work out of me, but the title is going to stay Our Lady of City Hall.
Anyway, what it was. It was the remake of The Time Machine, starring that actor, Pierce. It was made in the in the 90s, and the reviewers, hardly anybody went to see it, but I thought it was really, really good.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'll check that one out. I didn't think the remake of War of the Worlds was very good.
Tom Cruise? You don't like Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise was in some pretty good, relatively recent science fiction stories. He was in Minority Report, which was...
Yes, that was good.
That was fine, and also Oblivion.
Yes. So I saw both. I just watch it begrudgingly because Tom Cruise is such a goddamn jerkwad. But
okay,
the shows were good. Give him that.
All right, and that one about the people trapped, the main characters trapped in a time loop, and they have to keep solving the problem by learning a little bit farther of what happens in that time loop, and then every time they get killed, they get put back at the beginning and have to start over again. I can't remember what that's called. Something Edge of Tomorrow. I thought that was a masterstroke for a science fiction movie. That was one of the best. Edge of Tomorrow, and Tom Cruise is in that one too.
Well, I look forward to his final movie called The Edge of Senility.
Okay, all right. Well, that's going to happen sooner or later. I'll
be watching it on the same edge.
Remember what Morty said in Rick and Morty. Nobody exists on purpose, Summer. Nobody belongs anywhere. Everybody's going to die.
Yeah, I know, I know. It's quite
I can't
true.
Wait for, you know, Rick and Morty is the best thing on television frickin' ever. And everybody,
especially in this Trump era.
Everybody knows it, too. And you have to wait another year and a half for another new episode. That's almost too much. So I have some music to play from The American Astronaut. That was why I brought that up. Zeke, thank you for calling. I'll look for the next story you send me. Take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks so much. Onward and upward.
Onward and upward. Bye-bye.
Bye.